Welcome to Career Tools. This week, another edition of What Your Resume Says. Here we go. Okay, Wendy, so we've got another set of resumes to review and help people understand how recruiters, folks, hiring managers, folks like you and me, how we look at resumes and why sometimes you say one thing, but in fact, the other party, the hiring manager, sees something very different.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to the couple of resumes we have to review this week and share our points of view, we actually have an update from a previous resume that's been reviewed.
We do. So in the last cast, we reviewed Verdi Grant's resume. And one of the things we said about it was it didn't make a lot of sense to us in terms of he had come out of university, become a president of a company, and then had seemed to have gone backwards in becoming a manager. And he and I had some email traffic. And then I actually spoke to him on the phone because his resume still didn't make any sense to me. And by the time I'd understood what was going on, I was able to make some recommendations, some more specific recommendations than we had on the cast for changing it. And we're going to put up both his original resume and the new one. They're still anonymized, so you still won't know who it is. But you can see the difference it makes when you concentrate on the accomplishments and you kind of then once you've got the accomplishments and the responsibilities right, you kind of take a step back and look at the higher level stuff and what story does this tell and does it make sense. We made a couple of changes which are completely legitimate but really make a difference to the way that the resume reads. So hopefully people will find that interesting.
It's a good example of his resume makes complete sense to him.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Because he knows everybody's resume, well, it's accurate.
Yeah.
Right, he knows the whole story, and people don't realize that when they're looking at their resume, they know the whole story. And so the resume is accurate, but we don't know the whole story. We can't fill in the details. And this is a classic case where we didn't understand his resume, but it made sense to him. And he's probably thinking, how can you not understand it? But folks, it happens all the time. We can't read between the lines. We don't understand. We don't have your knowledge of yourself. And the resume, you actually have to have a higher standard than you saying that looks good or that's accurate, because the person who doesn't know you will draw a different conclusion. And often, frankly, the majority of the time, the vast majority of the time, the conclusion that's drawn is not a favorable one for someone whose resume reads differently than what they intended.
Absolutely. I mean, we said because we didn't understand it, we wouldn't have brought him forward for interview. And actually, when I spoke to him, he's very smart,
Perfect. Very aware,
very good executive. And if I had been a hiring manager, I would have missed out on someone who was pretty good.
So. Yeah. Right. And we wouldn't have felt bad about it.
No, right? I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't
we
have
wouldn't.
Done.
I mean, it's like, okay, I did a good resume analysis and the resume clearly shows me I don't want to hire this guy. And whose fault is that? It's the fault of the person who prepared the resume, who has a resume that is not effective in doing what it's supposed to do, which is get him a job interview.
Absolutely.
Okay, a little bit of background here. For those of you who are just joining us and don't know what we're doing, this series of casts, I think we're on our sixth one now, started as a question, which is how could we help people understand how their resume is read by recruiters and hiring managers and executives who screen resumes? We know, Wendy and I know, having looked at tens of thousands of resumes in our professional lives, we know what you want to say, right? We can get that. And yet we also know how that's going to be interpreted by people like us. We put out a request. Over 100 people responded with their resumes, which we have anonymized. We have 17 that we've picked to look at. A couple of people have said, your analysis was spot on and it was very bruising. And we don't shy away from that. We like to say, this is what we tell our friends. And if we don't think your resume is good, we're not going to give you happy talk. Okay. Now, we're not going to go over the format of the resumes in incredible detail. We've got our recommendations out there. For those of you who don't know, one of our most popular casts is from many years ago entitled Your Resume Stinks. We're really just looking at the content here. We will talk a little bit about the format with the idea of trying to help the person who created the resume understand how their resume is going to be perceived, and then they can make some changes to make it more effective. Does that sum it up pretty well, Wendy?
That sums it up perfectly.
Okay, good. All right. So the first resume we're going to look at, and by the way, for those of you who don't know, normally documents related to our casts are part of what we call licensee material. You have to be a paid licensee of Manager Tools or Career Tools in order to see this material. But for these casts, the resumes we're talking about will be available online on the page associated with this particular cast. And the first resume that we want to talk about is from Cora Beth Walton, who is a manager of online learning systems. Okay? So, Wendy, go ahead.
So my first thought, it's a two-page resume, which we would want to get down to
bad
one page.
Sign.
Right. Every time, one page.
Yeah, but to be clear, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting you say, we would like to get down to one page. And I immediately said, bad resume. You're seeing the glasses half full, which is, okay, she'll be able to get it or he'll be able to get it down to one page. And I'm thinking, nope, this is, you know, unless there's something significant here that I'll see in a 15-second scan, I would immediately rule it out. Because, unless I knew that this person was very senior, to justify more than one page. You say you'd hope, and I'd say, yeah, but as a recruiter, if we're just thinking as recruiters, would be a pretty quick.
It would be pretty quick, yeah. You've already got minus 5 points just for being on two pages.
Yeah.
And the fact that the first third of the first page is all stuff that I would dismiss. So she has a summary paragraph, which, as we've said in previous parts of this series, the summary paragraphs don't get read. They're always the same. They never say the truth. They always have lovely words like collaborative and strong team player and all of those things.
Leader and team player. Yeah. Didn't we just have an exchange with someone where someone sent you a resume? I can't remember exactly what the situation was. And they wanted you to comment on another resume service who had done an analysis, and this other resume service says you absolutely have to have a summary paragraph loaded full of words that will catch electronic resume screening systems and so on. And we were just agog.
I have been asked several times to comment on their reviews from this other service, which I won't mention. But I've been a recruiter. I know how often I read them. I've surveyed my recruiter friends. I know how often they read them, and the answer is zero. And if a computer can search your resume, it can search the whole thing.
Yeah, it's puffery. It's poofy. It's bloviating. It's all these big words that mean nothing. Everybody sounds great in a summary. Guys, the reason summaries don't work is you've had a professional life of some sort. If you're 30 years old, you've had roughly 10 years of professional life. It's impossible to get 10 years of professional life on one page of a piece of paper. By definition, therefore, your resume is a summary at a high level. The idea that a summary needs a summary when recruiters are skilled at doing a quick scan, it's ludicrous.
It is.
And it's always 4, 5, 6, 7 lines that are wasted. And in this case, we've got the title summary, as if we didn't know what that would be. And summary is actually hanging off to the left, as if to suggest that the margin for this page is much further to the left, but I'm going to go ahead and only use the middle third of the page. And it's just, I immediately had a negative reaction. And folks, I really am a nice guy. I look at this resume, I go, oh my gosh, strike one and two just looking at the summary.
And then we have a skills paragraph, which is equally useless.
I was going to try and find a nicer word.
But
yeah, guys, it is useless. And why is it useless? Let's talk about the difference between what the person means, as Cora Beth, and what the recruiter hears, right? Because communication is what the listener does, guys. And the definition of perfect communication is when the idea in your head goes through your mouth and into my ears and into my head and is translated perfectly in exactly the same, with exactly the same meaning as you intended it, what was in your head. What's in my head matches yours. That's perfect communication. And as the joke goes, I think Oscar Wilde once said, the only problem with communication is the idea that we think we're doing it. It just never happens. And so here's a case where somebody says, well, I want to highlight my skills. And they think, you know, I've got multiple pages, and so I'll just put a bunch of skills on there.
Yeah.
Folks, the reason why we don't like it is we don't need you to tell us what skills you have. We can read your resume, and we will know what skills you have. Okay, we don't need you to summarize it for us. This is another version of a summary, but it's around capabilities. And we're good at reading resumes. We can look at, for instance, in this case, manager of online learning systems. Shoot, I know what managers of online learning systems do. I don't need you to tell me learning management system administration in your skills section when, in fact, your first job or your most recent job is manager of online learning systems. I certainly don't need you to do it if you're going to take up 20% of the page, or let's say 10% of the page for a skills section. You intend to share with us your skills. We already know what your skills are when we read a resume without a skills overview at the top.
Absolutely. All these people who say, oh, recruiters only read my resume for 7 seconds and all those things. And I'm never convinced that anybody's ever watched anyone and timed them. And those are just made up statistics. But literally, I can read a resume in a minute because I read 400 a day when I was doing
exactly.
it. You know, in the same way that an engineer can look at a plan and say, that's not going to work, I can look at a resume and go, I know where this person is and what skills they have.
Exactly. Yeah, people don't understand that if you have to review a couple of hundred of them, you get pretty good at reading resumes. And I don't know. I certainly know there are resumes I've dismissed in 7 seconds. And if I have 100 to get through in an evening, I know that a bunch of them I can get rid of in 7 seconds. And that's the sexy time to tell somebody who's interviewing me about how I scan resumes. But there's others I'll spend 2 minutes on.
Yeah.
And I look at the resume and immediately it lays the way I want on the page. Immediately I look at a couple of things. I go, okay, those are good things. Now, at that point, I go, okay, I'm going to spend a minute, minute and a half on this resume, maybe even 2 minutes. I begin to look for negatives. I've actually seen positives, but I'm still looking for negatives to rule people out. And if I spend another 30 seconds and I haven't found any negatives, I'll continue looking, right?
Yeah.
But what everybody says is, oh, your resume only gets 7 seconds. Your resume gets 7 seconds because we know what we're doing. And there are all kinds of stories of software developers that say, well, you know, somebody's been down in the weeds writing code, and then a buddy of theirs looks up and goes, well, of course it doesn't work. You got this problem right here with syntax, or you got a problem right here with this failed command. You know, doesn't work. There's a Stack Overflow, whatever you want to call it. And you can see that differently because you're not the person who wrote the code. You're not in the details. Yeah. What about education? Education is a problem here as well, right?
Yeah. So after her summary and her skills, she has education. And yet she's been working for 16 years. And when you've been working, anytime you've been working for more than about five, it's between 5 and 7 years that you start to, that you need to make the change where education becomes less important than the employment that you've had, because you've been working longer, you've learned more in the 16 years you've been working than you did in the 6 or 8 years you were in even higher education.
Yeah. This is actually also a case where this person has been working in higher education and they have probably been, I could be wrong here, they have probably been infected by the culture of higher education where being published and your credentials are what matter. And folks, in the professional world, which by the way, operations and administration in higher education are absolutely in the professional realm as opposed to in the academic realm. They can be in both, but they're also in the professional realm. The focus on credentials, in other words, where you went to school and when you went to school and what you studied, and publishing is irrelevant. We don't care about it. What we want is people who can make things happen. And the fact that you got a master's in this or a certificate in that or a BA from this particular school, largely irrelevant for somebody with more than 5 years of experience, whether you're in the academic world or not. Now, if you're a professor, if you're a PhD, that's different. But the vast majority of resumes aren't those.
No.
I had a similar response to you, Wendy, regarding the months of employment.
Yeah. So she has the bottom half of the first page and 3/4 of the second page are her employment. And for example, for her most recent role, she just has 2010 till present. For the role before that, she has 2009 till 2010. Now, that role could have existed from December 2009 until January 2010, and she could have had the next role in December 2010 and had an 11-month gap, and her resume would still be truthful. And this is what I call the prison rule. If you don't tell me where you were, I assume you were in prison. because I can't tell. I don't know where you were. And literally, I called this the prison role for 7 years of recruiting. And in my last year of recruiting, I was working in a job where we took references very seriously. And we found out on the day someone started that they had lied on their resume and actually had been in prison. The gap was that's where they were. So. And so I feel completely justified in my overanalysis, absolutely, my overblown thing.
I don't see it that way. You know, this we could have a discussion that we've talked about before on our resume casts about, I don't think in this series, about the difference between persuasively truthful and truthfully persuasive. But my feeling is, when people do this, I don't call it the prison rule so much as I think of it as a weakness. They know that we would prefer months. There's plenty of stuff out there which says months, unless they're older and they've been led to believe that a lack of accuracy will help them. I see this as an intentional vagueness. And you would not be vague if you were the number one salesperson. You would not be vague if you got promoted in record time. You'd say that. So if you're being vague, there's only one conclusion I can draw. You believe it's a negative. So now I know you have a negative. Now, again, this is all in my head. I'm making assumptions here, and we don't mean to suggest that the resume system is perfect. It's not, but it exists, right? And, you know, Horstmann's ninth law, embrace reality. So I know two things. One, you have a weakness, and two, you're willing to be vague.
And you think you can pull the wool over my eyes.
Yes, exactly. Which is literally strike three, because I would not attempt to pull the wool over the eyes of this person relative to online learning systems. I just wouldn't. I would be like, well, you know a lot more about than I do. But somehow people believe their resume is their own special thing and they can do what they want. And you're right, you can. The problem is, it doesn't matter what you say. All that matters is what I hear. Even worse, what I think I heard or what I think I read. And you could even call us cynical, but the fact is, it's true, and this is how it's done.
So now we're on about minus 25 for poor Cora Beth. And then the next thing we notice when we actually read the detail of her roles, there is not one accomplishment on this. There's nothing that quantifies not how one. Well she's done something, how much money she saved, how at one point she's responsible for keeping servers up. It doesn't say whether or not she managed to keep them up. There's nothing that says how well she's done any of her jobs.
What's interesting about that from my perspective, Wendy, you have the prison rule. I have the you got fired rule. And the you got fired rule means simply this. If someone had a job, the job you were listing, they had it right before you and they got fired because they did it so poorly. If they had it for a year before they got fired, they clearly have to list it on their resume. Because they clearly didn't have any accomplishments, what they do is they list their responsibilities as accomplishments, as bullets, so that when we first look at the resume, when we do a quick quarter of a second scan to get a sense of how the thing lays on this page, to essentially grab the metadata out of the resume document before we start actually reading it, we can't tell that that person was fired. And rarely would anybody ever put fired on their resume, terminated for cause. So they disguise the fact that they didn't have accomplishments by putting responsibilities into bullet form. And it's only when we start reading the bullets that we go, aha, okay, so they actually haven't done anything, or at least the first five bullets are nothing but responsibilities. I can't imagine anybody would list accomplishments after five or six or seven responsibilities. The point being, if you have a resume, folks, with responsibilities as bullets, that's what people who were fired from that job would do. When you do that, we assume there's a chance you've been fired.
Yeah.
Now, it's probably not true very often. It doesn't matter. Your resume gets the taint of someone who didn't do enough to be able to capture it and put it in a bullet. And so you know you need bullets for whatever reason. That's out there in the ether. And so you put together a bunch of bullets, but they're not actually bullets. If you put a bullet on your resume, folks, it must be an accomplishment. Accomplishment is not what you're responsible for, not what the previous guy was responsible for, but rather how well you did it. In this case, in Cora Beth's case, the last line of the second job from the top, instructional learning lead, is projects include, this is in the responsibility section, and then the bullets are workflow for processing movies, Arab online proficiency test, and then workshops taught, but not how well they did. Yeah. But look, if you're in that job, we assume you have to teach workshops. We assume you have to do workflows. Well, so did the guy before you who got fired. There's no reason to believe you did this job well. Let me say that again. There's no reason on this resume that you did these jobs well.
Projects always need to have delivered on time, on budget, and on scope. At least one of those. Because if you have none of those, the immediate thought is it was a failure. Because otherwise you'd put it on there, right?
Right.
Okay. Since Cora Beth works in education, the last part of her resume is awards, conferences, and paper. And since she does work in the educational arena, even though she's in the operations part, which we would call business rather than academia, I would let her get away with that, those paper parts. It's possible that there'll be some academics or at least academic kind of people involved in her recruitment, and they like to see those things. So I would let it, and she has plenty of room. If she got rid of the stuff that we don't want and she used all her margins, she has plenty of room to leave those on there without being on two pages.
Do you think she has room to do it on one page with?
Yeah.
Do you really think? I mean, all right, good. I'll agree with you then. My sense was I have a two-page resume here. She's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 jobs. I would be very surprised. Now, of course, she has headings. Oh, I forget. Of course, she's got the top third of that first page is completely wasted.
Yeah, she's got wide top and bottom margins. I could get that on one page.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would say this. I worry about telling someone that and then having them say, well, with that, it's going to be longer than 2 pages. So I don't want a page and a quarter resume. No. So I'll just fill it back up again. And what I would say is, let's put it this way, Corbeth, you should assume that if your resume is long, you get rid of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Corbeth wants to email me and give me the challenge of getting it on one page, I would be happy to take that challenge. So the last thing I wanted to say about her resume was she's got pretty niche skills that she's in a fairly niche area of university. She's in learning systems. There aren't that many of those. There aren't that many people who are as experienced as she is with this kind of thing.
Blackboard and yeah.
She may well get past a resume screening just because her skills are so niche. But that doesn't mean that she couldn't have a much better resume. And right now she's at minus 30. I might interview her if I had 5 people to interview and I couldn't find anybody else, but she would be coming into the interview in my head at minus 30, whereas she could have a great,
exactly,
whereas she could have a great resume, still be one of the 5 people I interview and come into the room at plus 50, and I'm already liking her. Now my instinct is to find other things that to like about her, because that's human nature. So even if you've got very niche skills, there's no reason not to have a great resume.
Yeah. Folks, lest you think that we're dark-hearted and cynical and so on, we're not. Our approach to this is to say no. We look for reasons to say no. But don't kid yourself for a moment. Recruiters want to be able to look at 2 resumes with people with equal backgrounds and believe that the resumes are equal representations. We don't want to be sold in a resume. We want a market that is not skewed by resumes. And because of that, we look for resumes that generally follow a certain format. We don't want to lose somebody good because they have a bad resume. We don't want to hire somebody who has a great resume when in fact they're terrible. The problem is, we'll never exist in a world where 2 people with roughly equivalent skills are going to have roughly equal resumes, because there are so many stupid ideas floating around about resumes. And when we say this resume is terrible, it may be true that Cora Beth Walton, in this case, is an absolute genius of a person in her skill set. And we want to be able to look at a resume and say, this person's a genius, and then interview them going, boy, were we right. Not because we were right, but because their resume helped us see how good they were. And I think too many of us miss that, and we end up off track in our resume, and we get told no for all the wrong reasons. I've joked before about My least favorite recruiting outcome is something I call a Romeo and Juliet. If you remember the great Shakespeare play, of course, 5 minutes before the end of that play, Romeo and Juliet are in love and alive in the same room. And I can't remember which one. I think Juliet's laying on the slab, she's taking a potion to make her appear dead. Romeo comes in. Now she's alive and he's alive and they're in the same room. And Romeo realizes, oh my gosh, the love of my life is dead. And he kills himself. And if I recall correctly, she wakes up, sees he's dead, and kills herself again. And now they're both dead. And to have a company and a candidate be right for one another, the candidate's got the right set of skills, the company has the right job, and the company can't see it because the resume's bad, or the candidate doesn't get an interview because his resume bad, that's Romeo and Juliet. And the company makes an offer, but the candidate misunderstands, or the company doesn't make an offer when the candidate's perfect. There's enough inefficiency in the world as it is. We don't need to make it worse, but resumes do that. And we make no bones about it. The resume is the responsibility, and therefore a bad resume is the fault of the person whose resume it is. Simple as that. I'm sure that everybody's going to hate me now, but that's that's the world we live in. We promised we'd be candid.
And we are.
Okay. So want to go on to the other one?
Yeah. So the second one we've got is Esther's. So Esther Walton, because we're still naming our resumes after the Waltons. And at first glance, it's a great resume. It is in the manager tools format, which means that we have clear responsibilities, clear accomplishments. It's on one page.
Yep.
The dates are on the left, so I can look up the dates and check, yeah, kind of, they haven't got any huge gaps, so I'm good with that. I can look straight up the middle of the page and look at the job titles and see that there's a fairly straightforward progression.
Right, from earlier in the career until later in the career, I can read tool and die maker, tooling engineer, senior manufacturing engineer, senior design engineer, development engineer, and I know what those roles are. I'm saying, okay, there's some progression here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Good with that. And then it's all, apart from the first couple, the first three. After that, it looks like he's been at the same company for a good long time, but he's been progressing within that company. So for the people that say, is it a bad thing that I've been with a company for a long time? The answer is not necessarily. Oh. And if there's some progression still, then that's usually a good thing. You can usually put it out of your mind.
Yeah. Let me see if I can say that a little bit differently. Folks, if you ask me point blank, does it hurt me to stay at one company for a long time? The answer is no. Okay. In fact, all things being equal, which they never are, you jumping around is a net negative compared to being at one company. Now, then people throw the curveball of, okay, well, suppose I moved around to five or six different companies while progressing, as opposed to being at one company and staying in the same job. Well, okay, that's apples and oranges, guys. If you have a progression, and you a progression of increasing responsibilities, and you have the ability to show that you did well enough to justify a promotion. In other words, it wasn't just a title change with no responsibilities change. It wasn't just window dressing. If you've done that, then that's the best possible resume. Okay. Now, I suppose there are some small companies who would say, "Ooh, we don't want to hire that person from a big company." Although it's been my experience that people who move up in big companies don't have the problem that small companies worry about in terms of being stodgy or being uncreative and so on. People who are uncreative and stodgy don't get promoted into levels of increasing responsibility in most large firms, particularly large firms that are well regarded. And in this case, this person has been at one company for an extremely, you know, for a long time, 20 years. Because in this case, the company that's named at the top bought the company that they were at. And that's why the company's name changed. The other side of the coin, though, is the person who says, well, I want to jump around. We're not going to tell you that it's a dead negative if you jump around from small companies and you get promoted here and there and so on. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. In some cases, it can be good. It depends on the industry you're in. It depends on the quality of the companies and so on. When we see that, though, we know that different companies name the same job different things, and we'll probably dig in a little bit more beyond the title of the job to see what your responsibilities are. And if I look at five different jobs that you've been through at different companies in, let's say, 7 years or 8 years or 9 years, which is pretty darn quick progression or pretty darn quick changing, And I can't just draw a distinctly different, an order of magnitude difference between the job now and the job 10 years ago in terms of responsibilities and ability to accomplish things for the organization. I would say now I have a different worry, which is this person's been moving around and they either just like to move around, in which case, why should we invest in them? Mm-hmm. Our company, you know, our big company invests in people, or there's something there. There's a problem. This person goes in and jumps in feet first and pisses a lot of people off and ends up losing relationships that he or she needs later and ends up realizing that after 18 months, they have no more goodwill in the firm and they have to leave, or they're just itchy to go. So I just wanted to be clear about the whole, can you stay in one company? Of course you can. All things being equal, we want you to do that. It shows loyalty and willingness to stick it out. I've looked at many resumes. We've actually talked about this before, as I recall in a previous Career Tools cast. I've looked at people who have been in a company for a while in a particular industry and then leave. And then I realize they're in another industry and then they leave that one. And I realize what's going on is they're so focused on their own career and getting ahead. The moment their industry starts to go south, they jump to a different industry. And that is a red flag for us because we say, this person has never been through a downturn. They're now a director, maybe they're a senior manager, and they've never been through a big budget downturn. And if we think we're going to have a downturn in the next couple of years, if we've had a long boom for a while, I'm going to assume that that means you're going to be leaving in a couple of years, which for certain higher level roles doesn't excite me about bringing somebody on board.
Okay, so far we're feeling good about Esther. Then we start to read a bit more specifically the actual lines of the resume. Now, when I started to read it, there's one role in the first job, one in the second, one in the third, accomplishments that begin with successfully.
And let me just give an example. Wendy, can I do that?
Sure.
For instance, successfully led six so-and-so projects, 6, 4, 3, and 1 different types of projects. Okay. So in other words, it's an accomplishment. There are these 13, 14 projects and I was successfully delivered them. So he's probably thinking, or she's probably thinking, we're good to go here. I quantified that. It was successful. Why is it a problem?
No, because an adjective isn't, or an adverb is not a quantification. A quantification is a number. So what I would do is Esther has given all of her roles the same amount of space, more or less. And I would reduce the space she's given for roles earlier in her career. So her career started in June 78, and yet that role has 3 lines, and her most recent role has 7 lines, which is so she's given almost half as much space for a role in 78 as she has for her senior manager role, which is clearly more relevant to what she's looking for and more impressive. It's going to be because it's a senior management role and the first one was apprentice. So I would reduce the amount of space that she's used for earlier roles and give more space to the more recent roles. And that will allow her to break out those projects and say, delivered 6 of this kind of project on time, on budget, by using whatever she used.
Right. In other words, what you're saying is she would need more room because what she's done here is lumped 14 projects into one bullet. And in addition, when she starts breaking out some of those projects, she has to define what successfully is. Now, luckily, since we're talking about projects, all projects, if in fact you truly were successful, then it should be on time, on budget, on scope. That said, there's a downside to listing projects this way. It's the ultimate in vagueness. I successfully led 14 different projects. The downside of that is people know that projects rarely finish on time, on budget, and scope. So probably the definition of successfully here, no offense to Esther, is that the projects were completed. But I'd be willing to bet $100 that a lot of those projects didn't meet their original deadline and were over budget, but the budget essentially was forgiven. And I suspect the scope was reduced too. So while it's technically true, perhaps, that Esther led successful projects, it begs more detail. And if you don't have enough lines to do it, because you can't reweight, if you will, the resume toward later accomplishments, you can still highlight a couple of them and give us more detail regarding in scope, on budget or under budget and on time, and tell us what you did or something about the how you did it that will show us more of your skills just than you're able to complete projects successfully.
As you said, the resume is a summary. If I read a resume, or as a recruiter, if I read a resume and I see two or three projects delivered on time and on budget, or on scope and on budget, or whatever they achieved, then I assume that there were others because it's a summary. And if you're able to deliver projects on time, you're probably able to deliver projects on time. You know, it's a skill, and you're doing more than what's on there. So you don't need to include every single project, and you could just include one that's an example of you being able to do it, and I will assume that you have that skill and you're able to do it successfully.
Yep. Good point.
And the other thing she's done on her, particularly on the project accomplishments, is she's included the titles of the project. So she has, for example, M2, CST facelift, COL112.
Yeah, all of which are Greek to those, yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking, what are any of those? Now, if you're internal to a company and you're making an internal application and people internally call the projects by those names and they're important projects to the company and people will be impressed by the fact that you were on those projects or leading the projects, then keep them in. But if you're going outside of the company, always take them out.
Always.
Because they mean nothing. They take up space and they're not helping you.
Yeah. Look, guys, I know a lot of people who pride themselves on knowing a lot of acronyms. The acronyms here are 24U, ADR11, ESC, and EPA10. I'd be willing to bet that only one, maybe two of those are known outside of this firm.
Yeah.
And when we see stuff we don't understand, we assume that you thought about us reading it and not knowing your internal stuff. So we're wondering why you're telling us that. And we don't like that.
No. Because we're thinking you're taking up space.
Exactly.
And what does that mean? You don't have things to fill it?
Oh, yeah. That's really cynical. I don't feel so bad now. Yeah. So I would say this. If I were looking for somebody in this business, this resume, I would say, okay, good. I'm willing to give this person a resume, give this person an interview. It could say, I think with the kind of changes we suggested, it could go from good to exceptionally good.
Yeah.
And excite me about this person. It doesn't quite do that, but I think it's one of the best ones we've seen, don't you, Wendy?
I do. I think it's definitely one of the better ones. It says, you know, relatively effective, but with a bit of work, it could say really effective. And it could, like you say, get you really excited about seeing this person. The more excited I am about interviewing you, the easier the interview is for you. And we know that the hardest part of the process for you is the interview. So why not make it easy on yourself by doing a great resume where you have time to make it perfect rather than the interview that's all the pressure.
Yep, agreed. Okay, that's it for this week. Two resumes, one not so good, one pretty good and could have been better.
These are fun. I hope everyone's enjoying them.
Good. Thanks, Winnie.
Bye.